But it's to sport now, and in probably sunny Tauranga, we welcome Sam Ackerman. How are you, Sam?
I'm very well, thank you. It's miserable Tauranga today, unfortunately. The weather's pelting in sideways, but you know, when you live in paradise, you've got to accept the odd bung day every now and then, so I can't complain.
I'd be disappointed to hear anything else. We've been blown to smithereens, basically, for about the last 2 weeks, and now we've got, as you say, horizontal rain to add to it. But good for the gardens, right?
That's right.
Fill up Auckland's aquifers would be a good thing too.
Into we'll send as much up as we can.
Yeah. Into the sport now. Gosh, what do we make of this? The Bledisloe Cup rescue mission it was in a way, wasn't it? For one of the tests anyway.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, this. Obviously, we know the Rugby Championship was lost to Australia, and the reason for that was Australia's flexible rules around being able to train and quarantine. There was a lot of benefit to come for the teams playing in Australia as opposed to being locked up here and being told there was no ways around it. Now, the Bledisloe Cups are looking dicey as well, because the Wallabies, in particular, New Zealander, their coach, Dave Rennie, was like, well, we're not going to come if we can't prepare for a test being locked in for that long. It's crazy for them to think we're going to do that. And suddenly the rules have relaxed. Now, it should be pointed out, these rules are set for just the Australian team, not saying that they've done the same for Argentina or South Africa. And they're saying that because of the style, the conditions of quarantine from Australia, they're prepared to make those changes, whereas after 3 days they're able to train, within 6 days they can train within a team. And while that's a really important aspect, it feels like the Wallabies are getting a pretty sweet deal compared to, say, New Zealanders coming home from abroad or returning from situations where they needed to be there for some specific reason. They don't get given that same level of treatment. Are we happy to have the Australian rugby team given that so we can get some tests here? Yes, that does bring income to New Zealand. It's also something that's really important for the psyche of the nation. I know not everybody's into the rugby, but if we go on a generalist theme, the All Blacks playing is something that has the ability to be somewhat of a unifying force for the nation at a time they need it. I find it interesting as well that one of the tests will actually be on election day in the evening of, so the government almost actively encouraging people not to watch the election coverage as it comes in. It shouldn't affect voting, because, I mean, if you can't go vote on the day because there's going to be a test match at night, then you probably weren't going to vote in the first place. Same kind of thing. It's, oh, somebody's parked me in, can't make it. You know, so I don't expect to have political ramifications in that scope. But I think there are political ramifications in what this means for the precedent being set, because we've heard from already from a very sharp operator, the head of the ASB Tennis Classic, and Carl Budge. He's saying, well, you know, 3 days, I can make that work. If we can tell the international athletes coming down that they can have 3 days quarantine before they train, we can make that work to have the Classic still be a thing down here. When that'll be is still to be decided, because it depends on what happens with the Australian Open, so it's a very fluid shape. But he's still got a lot of interest from international managers and athletes wanting to come and play should a tournament get underway. He's saying a 2 week lockdown, you know, 2 week quarantine is virtually a death now for getting people down and involved. So should this be the new norm? Are we going to say athletes and those say performers? I mean, we know that there's been dramas around like Kirsten Dunst and the likes trying to come down as movie stars, thinking that they should have some type of treatment, but they're all told no. No, we're not making any exceptions. The Wallabies are the first exception in a big way that I kind of know of, in the sporting sense at the very least. I'll be very interested to know where this goes from here, because it is precedent that they did it for the Wallabies. Who else will they do it for?
Well, here's the thing, though. They did it for the Wallabies after they lost the Rugby Championship to Australia for not doing a similar thing. And I'm with you. I mean, this is the problem. If you do this for sport, for all the good arguments, all the good reasons you could argue, all the benefits, including economic benefits, let alone morale, as you point out, and industries and business, the problem is, what about others trying to get people into work on key infrastructure in New Zealand? Or what about the primary sector at the moment that is, you know, trying to get workers in for picking? I suppose the difference is it just less practical for big international players, quite literally, on their sports schedules to do the 2 weeks separated, unable to do any kind of combined training? Is it just in a different category because they are genuinely global global movers? I'm thinking of the film industry as well. Same thing. Like, again, there was an exception made, I think, because otherwise the key actors were going to be, this was Jane Campion's film, I think, the key actors were going to be overseas. Benedict, I can never say his name right, Cumberbatch. I always say Patch. So do you make an exception simply because their professions require them to be on strict international schedules and you just lose if you can't accommodate?
Yeah, but everyone's profession can be filtered that way is the problem, Catherine. Let's say you were trying to get somebody through, a business leader who you really wanted here to be a to encourage them to invest in something or other. They are on a tight schedule. They don't have time to mess around. That's why most of them have private jets and the like. Are we saying, well, it's okay then because they have a tight schedule, can they come? Your argument is valid. I just think that it's very easy to punch holes in it and to have you know, the pressure. I mean, Carl Budge, as I say, is an extremely intelligent man, went public as soon as he could on this to make sure it was very clear that these type of allocations sound like a great idea. Can't wait to be able to use them myself.
Here's the other thing to think about. We've done what we've done thus far, but and we've had some of the improvements clearly in things like contact tracing and some of the systems that we needed to be improved. Can you start to frame it as an argument? How are we going to get through the next 6 months, the next 12 months, the next 18 months? And it's going to be 12 months at least for a vaccine, and that's travelling on the best the best track, and that is coming from a New Zealand professor who's advising the Oxford trials. So do you have to just keep evolving how you're doing things, awkward as it is, and hopefully in step with having better systems to do so?
100%. It has to evolve, but once it evolves to a step, do you then hold people to the rules that were there previously? It's if it evolves, and it does it evolve for everybody? Mm-hmm. Why do wallabies get a higher interest? I mean, I know there have been some cases and some issues with Argentina and South Africa, but could there have been a chance to get them through here and bring that tournament here? We're now hearing that some of the All Blacks aren't going to make themselves available. We're hearing reports that some of the All Blacks may not make themselves available to go on this 10-week odyssey that will be the Rugby Championship now because of family. You know, a lot of them are either new fathers or expectant fathers and have young families. They're like, well, I don't know if I can really dedicate myself away for that long. Now, that's every individual's prerogative. I don't have an issue with what that is. But had that been played here, then they would have played. Now, imagine if the All Blacks, with the new coach, Ian Foster, taking away a week inside and getting them their backsides handed to them.
We've been done like a dog's dinner by Aussie on this one. But here's the other thing I find about this, and this is where I think you're alluding to. Like, is this political as well as a precedent? Because if we'd done it a week or two earlier, we could have made the case to keep the rugby championship here. So we kind of ended up with the best or the worst of both worlds in some ways. On that point, Ian Foster was a little hot under the collar about those reports when we talked to him a couple of days ago, but then equally seemed to confirm that the very least these players were raising questions, as he put it. And they had been trying to talk to us, or were trying to talk to Australia about the possibility of shortening the tour for some players. But as he explained it again, that means mucking around with quarantine systems and who's where when, and it didn't sound like it's very very likely to happen.
Injury cover. Imagine over there you need to get someone across. Can we say, okay, well, can we do 3 days quarantine because this guy needs to play a test on Saturday? And same thing with the summer of cricket comes, bringing foreign players in, going, look, sorry, our opening batsman broke his finger, he can't play, so we need someone through. Does everyone go, oh, okay, fair enough, we need to rush through the system? It is precedent setting and damaging. As what you're saying for the All Blacks as well, done like a dinner is a perfect way of explaining where this is.
They're good at that stuff, the Aussies.
Far out.
Yeah, all right. I mean, obviously, it's you know, one of those tests was around election weekend, so there's some sensitivities around it. I thought he was trying to angle for a Sunday game, actually, Foster, but have they settled on
there's one Saturday night game and one Sunday game, as far as I understand. Yep. I certainly know the Prime Minister has stated that she doesn't think that a game on election night is an issue.
Well, elections since the beginning of time have been scheduled to avoid that, so we'll see what happens. Yeah. What other cancellations have we got at the moment, by the way, on the COVID front?
Yeah, well, it's. I mean, we could spend every Friday talking about the cancellations, quite frankly. But the All Whites have reportedly, again, New Zealand Football haven't announced it, but the sources I've spoken to are very adamant that it is done, that they're going to miss out on playing Belgium, who are the world number one in Brussels, which would have been a wonderful moment. But essentially just getting players available and physically there to play has become too difficult. Right now, the game against England is still on, but watch this space. That would be a real blow for New Zealand football after getting a couple of great exposure opportunities, and they haven't played much in a long time. And speaking of not playing much in a long time, the Black Ferns, our iconic women's rugby team, haven't played a test since August last year, and by the time they play one now, will be 20 months in between. There will be no test rugby of any variety played by the Black Ferns. And this is, again, the situation when people bring up, you know, does women's sport get treated differently? Well, New Zealand rugby were doing everything they could to make a test happen here, but the Wallaroos, the Aussie women's rugby team, has essentially decided not to assemble this year, just in the two hard baskets. So perhaps I don't think you can accuse New Zealand rugby of treating it that way, because this was supposed to be one of the best ever schedules, with 8 test matches to be played, including putting the Black Ferns in front of a lot of different parts of the country, playing double headers with the All Blacks as well, and getting some real great exposure to audiences ahead of a Rugby World Cup for the women's sport being held here next year. But it's been canned, and for nothing that the New Zealand rugby or the Black Ferns could have done about it. It's everybody else unwilling to make those steps. Would they have been willing to make those steps with the men's team? It's, you know, you see the efforts being made too with the Rugby Championship and the Wallabies, but the Wallaroos weren't given that same level of, I suppose, support.
Warriors have got a good signing by the looks of it on the field anyway, but there are some questions about off-field culture stuff, are there?
Yeah, well, I'm raising the questions at least. Aidan Fanua-Blake is a very good player. He's played for the Kiwis New Zealand Rugby League team before he changed his allegiance to Tonga. The fact of the matter is he is a very strong player. Any team in the comp would want a player of his ability, and the Warriors desperately need a player of his ability. It makes sense that he's asked for a compassionate release so he can get out of Sydney with his family. Where that means he'll go, it seems to be unknown, but the Warriors jump straight in to match his $850,000 a season deal that he currently has with Manly. So that's kind of, it's a pretty good spot for Manly to be at, because they wouldn't need to pay any of his contract going forward. It would be a very easy, clean split. The Warriors get their man. But he certainly is a guy that doesn't mind getting quite vitriolic on social media and having a crack at people. He's also the player, I don't know if you remember earlier this year, who was suspended for calling referee twice, once on the field in the heat of the moment, and then in the sheds afterwards when he had a chance to calm down, using a slur regarding disability towards him. And it was, you know, it was pretty vile the way it was delivered, and certainly came with cuss words and delivered with a bit of sting. So he's a bit of a hothead, a very good player, but a hothead. This is the same club that tried to sign Jack DeBellin, who's currently suspended on a stand down from the NRL because he's facing sexual assault charges in court. So he's not allowed to play, but the Warriors said, yep, we'd definitely have him. If he gets cleared, we're keen to get in before he's even cleared. So Jack DeBellin, again, is an Origin player and a very good rugby league player, but culture-wise, are these guys, when you talk about the culture within the team, does that mean winning, or does culture mean players who represent the team well? We know what Roger Tuivasa-Sheck brings to that culture. He is an incredible human being as well as an incredible player. Surely that should be the target. I'm a little concerned, because I know that the Warriors in previous years have copped it when they've signed guys like Brett Seymour, who had very clear alcohol issues when he came to the club. Other players have been shuffled on for having bad attitudes. If you're allowed to be a really good player, but, you know, not fit within the norms of what you consider a good bloke, are they the right steps to making this a better footy team? I challenge whether it is.
Just a minute to remember Phil Kingsley-Jones, best known, of course, for Jonah Lomu's career. Your take on his contribution to the wonderful world of sport?
No one who met him forgot him. Let me put it that way. He was larger than life, even though he was not the tallest of men. But he was constantly part of John Olomou's life. And his biggest dedication was to the Counties Monaco team. And I pass on our condolences to everyone who is suffering the loss of a good friend and man there. But John Olomou would not have been an All Black to the extent that he was if it wasn't for Phil Kingsley-Jones. Simply put, I know there's been fallings out since. And every side's got two parts of the story. And perhaps he was an enabling going on at different times, sure, but John Olomou would have been lost to rugby league, gone to American football, all these offers, but Phil Kingsley-Jones was adamant that the All Black is where he wanted to see him, and he made that happen. So if anyone loves John Olomou's legacy, they'd need to be tipping their hat to one Phil Kingsley-Jones, who played a huge part in that.
Thanks very much, Sam Ackerman, our sports commentator.